Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast, where Polar interviews people so you can do more investing and less gambling.
Hello, everyone. It is Polar here, the CMO of Seasonal Tokens. Welcome on another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast. Today, we have another special guest. We have Adam from Macroverse. He's the co-founder. He has been working in the film and TV industry for more than 20 years. He has even been part of one of my favorite movies, Transformers. But right now, he's also working in the Web3 space, and he has a lot of great stuff to share with you. Enjoy the episode. So welcome again, Adam.
Hello. So glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for accepting my invitation.
It's a pleasure. No, it's great. I'm very glad to get connected. I've been listening to your shows, and there's some really interesting stuff that you all discuss. It's great.
Perfect. I'm sure that you're ready to provide a lot of value to our listeners. Just a small secret that I'm going to share with our listeners right now. We spent probably around 20 something minutes talking about different stuff. And I can definitely say that Adam has a lot of knowledge and very interesting way of thinking. So I'm so happy to have you here. So without further ado, can you introduce yourself and your background with a few words?
Yes. So my name is Adam Martin. I am one of the co-founders of a new media and Web3 company called Macroverse. So we focus on kind of Web3 entertainment, but really beginning with comics. So using comics as a kind of IP development tool and telling kind of really using comics as a way of developing and telling great stories that can then be A, provide kind of fun and entertainment and value to their kind of readers and holders from the kind of digital space, and then obviously going and taking those on, hopefully taking those on and up into film, television, animation, games, all that kind of fun stuff. My background is in physical production. So I've been an assistant director in Hollywood for 20 plus years. My other two co-founders, one comes from kind of traditional illustration animation, and the other comes from gaming. Started the digital gaming division at Disney back in the day, and then has bought and sold a couple of his own companies. So between the three of us, we kind of know how to make stuff in a really interesting and exciting way, especially in the Web3 space, where I think there's a lot of people are excited and want to do good things and interesting things, but don't actually know how to do it in terms of kind of expanding an idea or a concept or a brand. Whereas we do, and that's part of what we're kind of up to.
Yeah, you have an amazing background. And one of the things that I really love, and we talked about that, is that you have been part of the great Transformers movie. So let's say it's a little bit an honor for me to have you here. But, I'm really
one of 500 people working on that show. So, you know, it's not.
But you have been one of the most important people that are working on the movie. So it's still a thing for me, right?
Oh, well, thank you. It's very flattering.
You are not the 13th tree on the scene, right? So
that's true. This is true. Although I was on Transformers, we had, you know, those like pool cleaning, the pool cleaning poles with the nets on them that you can kind of extend to a different length. So what we would have would be the different robots' heads on those pool poles with markings at the different heights for how big they were. And so the scenes where like the actors are talking to the robots, I was often one of the people walking around holding these poles. And so like, you know, they'd look up and they'd lean down, they'd do whatever. So I can say it's not really the third tree on the left, but I was like the third robot on the left a few times.
That's a very important role, I think, in the movie.
So I hope so, but yes.
So anyway, in that sense, I'm really interested to know like how you have arrived from film and TV production to Web3. Like, yeah. What has made you make this move?
Kind of, what was that path? Yes. I think for me, so I was very lucky growing up. My mother was a film critic. My dad was a diplomat, funnily, so we kind of bounced around the world quite a lot. So I think there was a very multicultural exposure there. But then my brothers are both writers and producers. There are actually three of my brothers are writers and producers. My stepfather was a novelist. Like there was a lot of kind of entertainment, shall we say, in the family. And so when I graduated, my brother was the one who said, come to Hollywood, you know, we'll you know, see if we can hook you up on a movie. And I was an assistant, and then I worked my way up that ladder. And the whole time though, I was keen and I was desperate to tell stories. Like I love telling stories. I would write as a kid. I would draw little things. I grew up on comics. Like I learned to read on Asterix, if that's, you know, so I've always wanted to tell stories, but my career took me into one of the kind of production paths, which was great. Once the script is written, now how do we effectively convey that on film? But that itch, that desire to tell stories was always there. And so initially, when I met my partner, Eben Matthews, my business partner, Eben Matthews, he and I produced a comic. He very much took the lead. A comic series based on this movie, The Boondock Saints, came out about 10 years ago. The movie came out 15 years ago, huge cult hit. We produced a comic kind of bridging the two movies. And that led us back into stories in a way that into comics in a way that was incredibly exciting. Having written scripts and gone around town and optioned some stuff and kind of done stuff in Hollywood's traditional way, what we realized was we can take these ideas that we have that right now, if you sell a script, chances are it sits on the shelf and gathers dust at a studio forever. Versus we can take those same ideas, do it as a comic, and then we have something tangible that we can take out in the world and people can read and people can enjoy. And then there's still the chance that it goes and gets made as a movie down the road. In fact, there's a better chance if it's done well. So we were kind of led back into comics just through a desire to tell stories, and then launched a comics app called Macroverse, which is a kind of unique way of reading comics, you know, optimized for mobile, kind of a mobile experience. And that led us back into, so that Web 2 comics app, and then we hit Web 3 and NFTs 2 years ago, kind of with everybody else, and realized, wait, the missing piece of what we've got here is digital collectability. That's what we should be doing, because again, loved collecting comics growing up, no real chance to collect stuff as in a digital format, but suddenly with the advent of NFTs and Web 3, there was this digital collectability. And so we're like, oh, this is exciting. We can do both of these things. And so we spent the last kind of couple of years really developing something we think is unique in that space. And so that was what it was that, honestly, it was that desire to tell stories that led us back into this Web3 world, and now doing it with communities and in different groups and different projects has been really fun.
Nice. Yeah. Web3 is definitely giving a lot of opportunities for people to achieve more, to like their work to be seen in other places, in other styles, in other forms. So I have a feeling that this is exactly what people need, another opportunity for something like that. So in your perspective, how do you think Web3 is embracing traditional entertainment?
So I think the major way that I think what we've seen, you're seeing a couple different things, right? So obviously recently there was that whole kind of Disney metaverse expansion that was happening under the former CEO, and that all just got shut down. So like 50 people, five. So I think there is kind of there, and then I think there's a lot of concern, certainly in the comic space, about art theft and plagiarism and these, you know, Web3 making this easier to do these things in all these ways. So I think there, it's not that there is not concern there, but I think there are a lot of players in the space who see Web3 and blockchain technology and digital collectibles as ways to give and enhance consumer experiences within these bigger traditional media companies. So, you know, I think you look at a recent, it's funny because I feel like the Disney the Disney metaverse kind of extinction, I think has dominated the news cycle in the last week. But hot in the heels of that was this Avenged, if you know the band Avenged Sevenfold, they're a heavy metal band who have a couple of years ago, you know, one of the kind of band leader has been into the NFT space for a long time. So they started this kind of Web3 fan club, basically. So they buy and sold NFT tokens, and there'd be token gated communities, and the band would interact and whatever. And Ticketmaster, so the huge, you know, concert ticket provider, basically the big player in the space, they had a disaster with this Taylor Swift concert tickets 2 months ago that at waiting times and thousands of dollars and bots grabbing everything up and this absolute disaster of a launch. Avenged Sevenfold through Ticketmaster did the exact same thing, but said, no, look, our fan club members, so look, you know, however many thousand people that own our NFTs, we are going to token gate this thing. If you hold an NFT, you get priority access. You can choose the shows you want. You can buy a couple of tickets. Made it incredibly easy for their most devoted fans to buy tickets for the show ahead of anybody, for their tour ahead of anybody else. And then the gates open and then the casual fans can come in and buy and do whatever they want. But they actually protected their loyal fan base by using Web3 tech. And I think that's such a great example of where more kind of traditional entertainment, obviously music very specifically, but it's a very easy step to say, well, Disney can now take this and you can have fans of this series on Disney that have these digital collectible items that can then unlock special experiences at parks when you show up. I think fan clubs are going to be a huge way. I think you'll have Crapopolis, this show from Dan Harmon that's coming on FX. That is going to be, you know, he's got these crap chickens that you can buy and the community can vote on different decisions within the story making and they can vote on different characters and who gets. So there is this kind of engagement aspect to this whole thing, which I think that is going to be open the floodgates to traditional entertainment. And then I think all the way to people who develop stories around collectibles that they own. It's a lot of what we do is, you know, how to tell stories and how to develop ideas around something that you already own that is provably yours that now you can take out into the world at large. And the protection that comes with being able to show on the blockchain that you, as the creator of this thing, you initiated it, it's your idea, here's the track record, here's how you can see every interaction with this, and now you own this original IP. I feel like those two, the kind of ownership side and then the fan engagement side, I think those two things we're already seeing becoming very appealing to traditional entertainment, and I think that'll only get more so.
Okay, but at the same time, don't you think that some of the really good artists are still not very familiar with the technology and they're pretty scared that someone can steal their work?
100%. No, I think you're totally... Look, the onboarding experience for Web3 is still a bloody disaster, right? I mean, it's... Yeah, I've got to... Wait, I've got to go get... So I'm on Chrome, I've got to get an extension, and then I do this thing, and I've got to buy this kind of commodity, ETH through this thing, and then I have to go... Like, no, it is a laborious process, and I think, you know, when you saw someone like Top Shots taking off, part of the reason they did that is because you could show up. It felt like I was interacting with any other website where I'd plug my name and number in, plug my name, email address, put a credit card down, and now I could buy and sell things, you know. And so I think, you know, that is going to have to be the next big jump that Web3 makes, is making that more kind of user-friendly. And at the same time, I think it was a different kind of thing, but you've got Starbucks, obviously their loyalty rewards program is now all blockchain based, but you have no idea. You're just interacting with it on an app. So that I think is those kind of, again, the loyalty, the rewards, that type of stuff, I think is going to pave the way for that. And then I think your second point in terms of artists feeling like this makes it easier for people to steal my work, I think in a weird way, I think that is just a misconception. I think it does make it harder. However, you as an artist produce a piece of work and you release it on the blockchain. It is then verifiably your piece of work. What that doesn't do is prevent anyone from copying it and releasing and selling their own knockoff of that. But I think that happens. I think what gets tricky is that happens already. So any piece of art that's up on the internet, you can download a high-res file of it and you can put it on your wall. You can use it as a desktop. Certainly in our industry, in the comic space, there are plenty of places, you know, records of people taking other people's work, going to shows, selling it as their own. I mean, this art theft happens already. It's not unique to Web3. Web3 has made it slightly easier to monetize, but that's where I think education comes in. So you know what you're buying and who you're buying from, as opposed to the slight free-for-all that it has been.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Thefts, they have been going for many years. Like, we remember the stage of audio and MP3s, right?
Yes, exactly.
It is still happening till today. There have been many fights about that, court decisions and things like that, but this is not going to stop. I'm pretty sure about that, at least in the coming 20 years or so.
The MP3 thing is a great point. It's funny because you're absolutely right. Is that kind of nascent Web 2 tech that allowed this explosion of piracy? Yeah, that's very much in the same state now. It's a great point.
Yeah, the problem that I see is that people that are against crypto are making this issue like something that is coming from the industry, like something unique that is not happening in another industry, right? For example, in Web 2, but that's not the case. The thing is that, you know, sometimes it's very important to have the more funds to advertise something. And I believe that those that are against NFTs or have other type of interests, they have more funds and they're using them to scare people in all possible ways. Like, there isn't a technology or a thing in the world that doesn't have loopholes, right? Yes. Like, in nature, everything is imperfect. And like, this leads to many opportunities in the end. That's the thing. But the problem is that this type of campaign is pushing away people, mainly because a lot of people are lazy, actually, to make their own research and see that it's just something that is happening. And if you are an artist, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people are stealing your work, even if it is not in the blockchain, right?
Yeah.
But you don't know about that.
Right, and that's the thing. I think you're totally right. You've said a lot of very sensible things there. I think you've got, there is the kind of buyer beware aspect of things, right? It's like, if you don't know what you're getting into, you better be really bloody careful when you're going. And that's where I think you're right. Like, you're doing your own research, getting your own education, learning about these things. Like, I love Kevin Rose, who does the Proof podcast, and we're a part of that community, and we love, like, they're great. Like, he always says, like, great, something new and interesting comes along, take $100 and kick the tires on it. Like, just experiment with a little bit of money and see what you can do and see how to, don't feel like, oh, great, there's this new thing that's going to make me $1 million, therefore I'm going to invest my life savings, right? So I think there is that desire, there is that perception that crypto leads to quick riches, that of course, when people are struggling, especially during something like a pandemic, and scary, and people are worried about their financial futures, and like, they're gonna take risks they shouldn't be taking, right? And then you're right, the narrative from the outside becomes, it's full of scammers, therefore, it's kind of what we were talking about a little bit before. It's like, well, there are these bad actors in the space, therefore the whole space is bad. Now, it doesn't bloody help when FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried and Luna and these, you know, multi-billion dollar implosions that took a lot of people's money, that really helps the anti-crypto narrative. But it makes it very easy to paint the whole space, but carve the whole space with that same brush. To me, I think it's always that I think you was, you know, very much pointing out the kind of the hypocrisy of the institutions is, well, great. Yes, that happened. And this guy should go to jail. These people, like, these are criminals. They need to be punished for this thing. Like, 100%. That is a criminal doing bad things who needs to be punished, right? And, well, you know, the U.S. banking crisis, in 2008, hundreds of billions of dollars, millions of people kicked out of homes because the banks were running scams. Two bankers went to jail for that. Caused a global economic meltdown, like Wells Fargo caught multiple times doing, you know, huge U.S. bank Wells Fargo scamming customers, slap on the wrist funds. Like, these are massive institutional investments. You would never say, I mean, sorry, there are people who say you don't need banks. I personally don't believe that. I don't believe that you don't need banks. I think you need banks to some degree, right? But I would never say all banks are terrible because these people did these, there were these people doing these bad things. Is there an institutionalized pressure to do these things? Yes. Are there issues, are there structural issues in some of these huge banks that push them towards taking risks and getting the outsized returns? Yeah. So I think there's lots that needs to be remedied within the banking system. However, fundamentally, I think we need banks. And I think that's that, but the same people saying, well, all of crypto is terrible are not necessarily then saying, well, yeah, but the bank, you know, we're the first people to bail out the banks that start to fail. You know, I think that hypocrisy gets a little frustrating when you're in the space.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing similar cases right now with the banks. They're again failing.
Yep.
But still, nobody is guilty for that, right? Even though I think it's pretty obvious who is the reason this to happen, but that's another topic. I'm not sure how many of our listeners will be happy to hear that you believe that we need banks, especially after the crisis right now.
Yes, I know it can be controversial in this place. I feel like some kind of centralized banking system's good. And pluses to minuses to both sides. I am kind of ambivalent on that. But yes, I know that'll cause some controversy.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially right now, and especially if some of our listeners have lost some of their funds because of this failure of banks. Anyway, it's part of the process of a new technology to grow. I mean, crypto, when there are issues like FTX, Luna, like we said, issues, loopholes in the technology, in the system, in the nature, they give opportunities. And this gave a lot of opportunities. But of course, the price was really high.
Yeah.
And it will remain high. But and that's the problem.
Right. Oh, no. And I think criminals will always find the cracks in a system, right? So it's and especially when it is a kind of emerging technology. I mean, you know, the you only have to look back to the kind of, you know, it's only 25 years ago, I guess, you know, that internet and email was kind of a new thing. And all these OAP, you know, all these people getting scammed by the you know, the prince from wherever needs help.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, those guys are crooks and they're going to be doing this. And there's this new thing that allows you to get to a lot of people really fast. Yes, there are going to be crooks who take advantage of that, right? And I think especially when you have there is kind of suddenly real and consumer money, meaning potentially less educated money. I think it comes back to your point about education and making sure they are educated. When you have less educated money suddenly flooding into a space and therefore developers scrambling to develop things to take advantage of this influx, which is driving innovation and doing all sorts of cool things, but also means, well, crap, this crack in the system, someone smart can find their way in and suddenly there's real people on the street losing real money. I think that gets very challenging. And the idea that, you know, as it were, I know that if I've got my funds at, you know, I've got, you know, 10 grand sitting in a bank account at Chase, I know that's pretty safe. I know if Chase goes under, that's going to be covered. I kind of know I'm all right. if I've got 10 grand sitting in ETH in my in a private key, or if I've got a couple of Bored Apes sitting in something, right? Well, someone could come along and hit me over the head with a pipe until I give up my private key, and then it's just gone, right? Whereas no one can do that to me with banks. And that's where I feel like there is the, I think there's the need for some balance there. And I think, you know, your point earlier about private responsibility is well taken. I think as you explore this space, you need to make sure that you're protecting yourself as much as possible.
Yeah, and trying not to be hit by a pipe.
That was an extreme example. I heard that.
But you're right.
I was listening to the podcast Bankless, which I love. And they were told they had used what they had a guest on who used that in this example as why we need these kind of checks and balances between these two systems. Mm. I was like, oh, you know, that's a good metaphor for that. But
yeah, it makes sense. Absolutely. So, I'm sure that because of your work as part of this project, you have heard many people talking against Web3.
Yep.
So what you have been telling them by trying to like explain the world of Web3, or you have been somehow trying to convince them that they're wrong in their opinion about Web3.
Yeah. You know, it's a great question. Yes, I think, right, I'm sure all of us in this space, right, we've all heard the same kind of variations on the same things, I think, is what you were mentioning before. It's like the artist who's concerned that their work is going to get stolen and sold by somebody else, right? The music, you know, musicians who are feeling the same thing, the people who look at the space and I think see one of two things. They see the financial scams, they see FTX, or they see Bored Apes, they see like monkey JPEGs, right? Those are the two things we see. And so it's a scam or it's just this stupid art and I don't understand it. To me, the biggest thing underlying it all is not any one use case. And I think this is how I respond to the objections, because it does tend to be, I hate this, none of it's real. Especially in the comic space, right? This is what we hear. It's not real. People steal art and it's full of scams. Like those are the things we get. It's like, okay, it's not real. Well, fundamentally blockchain tech, this is my answer to these things, right? It's like blockchain tech is simply a ledger. That's fundamentally what it is. It's just an endless record of transactions. So if once you log your place on that ledger, anything associated with that transaction is now immutable. Can't be changed. It's in place. Great. You've got a piece of art associated with that. You've got an idea. You've got a piece of music. You've got a comic. You've got a whatever that might be. That is now in place on this, which means you can prove ownership and you can prove, you know, any rights that gives you, any opportunities that gives you, any experiences that can come along with that are uniquely yours in a way that a password and an interaction, you know, an email address and a password online does not give you in the same way. Secondly, in terms of art theft, we covered this, right? It's like that's happening anyway. Yes, the monetization of that art theft can happen slightly more easily in this situation. However, a bit of education and you can track that back. And actually what this has done as well is allow thousands of artists who would never normally be able to have any kind of reach or voice have that in amazing ways. So the art discovery process is no longer either scrolling through stuff on kind of DeviantArt online or very high priced going to shows, going to galleries, doing this thing. I think the advent of marketplaces and the explosion of interesting art and artists and ways of interacting, I think, has it actually opened up the art market to a swathe of people who would never normally be in the collecting game. You know, it's like that old joke of like, you know, what do you do when you have a ton of money? Well, you start to collect art, right? It's you buy a vineyard and you collect art. So that is tended to be the realm of the incredibly rich, and it no longer is. And I think that's a really good thing for the space. And then from us, thirdly, I point to the examples of how we are working with organizations and teams to develop storytellers. We're a storytelling company. That's what led us back here, right? So what we've been doing now with a couple of projects, we're about to kind of announce a couple more. You know, they're PFP projects. People go, they buy an avatar, they own their avatar, they hope something's going to happen. So what we've done now, and with our own community and a couple of others, is great, you own this avatar. Now we're going to teach, we're going to spend a couple of hours teaching storytelling, basic storytelling in the community. So we're going to talk about character arcs. We're going to talk about how to tell a story, what they, how they should flow, what are the ups and downs, this basic kind of storytelling stuff. And then you, the community, get to pitch ideas around your characters that you own, provably own on the blockchain. You pitch your ideas back in the community. Community votes. The top six of those, we then green light. And so we produce little short stories based on those characters. So these are brand new people. A lot of people, you know, I think so many people have creative aspirations, but don't really know how to go about telling a story or don't really know what the avenue is. And what we've seen is incredible stories coming out of people from all over the world. So, I mean, you know, India and South America and Eastern Europe and China and, I mean, obviously North America. I mean, it's like across the spectrum, people telling stories about these characters that they've kind of that they have bought and enjoy. And we've produced these short comic series now based on those. And that's been amazing. And it's incredibly exciting for us to help see and develop and kind of coach and hone some of this kind of raw talent. But then for them, it has been incredibly exciting to see something they have created go from being, hey, I've kind of always wanted to write something, to, holy shit, I have a short comic now that's actually mine and it's my idea and there's a license attached to this thing. And if this becomes something else, I can benefit from this. And, you know, that's really exciting. And that is unique to this space, which I think, again, comes back to kind of art opportunities for artists, I think, is something, along with the bad stuff, but is something that has been really positive coming out of the last couple of years as well. I hope that answered your question. I think it did. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty long answer. More than I expected.
Yes.
Yeah, but I can feel the passion in your words when you're talking about artist, Web3 stories. So it's totally understandable. But we are close to our end of the episode. Yes. So there is one very important question that I want to ask you, because you're also a crypto investor, and maybe we'll make a separate episode talking about your crypto investing tips, but right now we don't have the time for that. But we have the time for a very, very important question, and which is, like, how do you think a person can do more investing rather than gambling in crypto?
Yes, and I mean, obviously that's such it's a crux of your podcast, and I think it's so important. It's such an important question, and I think to me it does come back to education. So I think there's a few podcasts that I value hugely in the space. I think educating yourself around treating, you know, to me it's treating. Forgive me, because I'm trying to avoid giving you a long and rambly answer again. So I think, to me, it is treating crypto investing like you would treat any other kind of investing, like stocks, like real estate, like anything else. Give it the same level of respect that you would those. So you may have your kind of fun that you're doing some highly speculative stuff with. Great, but make sure that allocation for the meme coins is 5% maybe of your overall investing strategy. Know that crypto is risky. So great, if you've got a broad investing strategy that includes stocks, bonds, maybe some real estate, fantastic. Crypto does tend to be more volatile. It is a little more high risk. Well, great, make sure that you're allocating an appropriate amount of your investment portfolio to that. And then within the crypto space, look at, what are the companies providing real value with their tokens? Is it the meme coin? If it's Doge and there's who knows what's happening there, great. If you want to play with that, play, but make sure you know it's playing and it's highly risky and therefore only have a small amount. know that Ethereum is, there's a lot of work, but there's a ton of infrastructure being built on top of Ethereum. Therefore, it, you know, much like the stock of a company, its use case is large. Again, not investing advice, obviously, but this is my approach, is, you know, the use case of Ethereum is really strong. So that feels like something, therefore, that's going to be around for the long term. It's been very, it's obviously got a long track record. It's, people know what it is, blah, blah, blah. Look at other companies, look at other organized companies, organizations who have tokens. What are they doing? What's their reach? How much support do they have within a community? How many users do they have? It's obviously not, that is obviously not like any stock, that is not a kind of, or any commodity, any whatever, that is not a uncorruptible way of approaching it. You look at Luna last year as an example. But you know, knowing that the underlying tech or the DAO or the company or the whatever it is who has released this token is actually doing real things in the world, in this space, that will give some solidity to that token. Is in exactly the same way as you would if you're buying Netflix or Apple or anything else on the NASDAQ, as it were. You would apply those same set of instructions. So I think that's what it is to me. I think treat crypto investing with the respect that you would anything else and look for value outside of the hype cycle.
You're absolutely right. We are used to somehow falling the trap of hype.
Yes.
And forget that in a lot of cases, it has been proven that it's a great marketing tactic, but there is nothing behind it. Like, there is no real purpose, no real project, and no real value behind that. So I think what you're saying makes total sense, and it can help tremendously to people. So,
good,
Adam, thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast. It was an amazing pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. No, it's a great conversation, both before and during. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you very much to all of our listeners. I hope that you enjoyed the episode. If you do, make sure to like, subscribe, comment. We are happy to hear what you think about it, what you want to hear in the future. But in all cases, I'm Power, the CMO of Seasonal Tokens, and I'll talk to you on the next episode. Bye.